Hello and welcome to A History of the United States, Membership Feed, Episode 2, The Rise of the Aztecs. We begin today in the year 1111, supposedly the date the Aztecs left Aztlan and began their journey to Tenochtitlan. Over 2 centuries of travelling. It's worth briefly mentioning what I said last week about the difficulties of establishing Aztec history. Much of the dating is suspect, and a lot of what we're going to talk about are legends. This is often the case with societies for which a written history hasn't survived. The information is coming through the lens of both 16th century Aztecs and the Spanish who were interviewing them. 2 particular accounts which this section will be using are The History of the Indies of New Spain by Diego Duran, a friar who did much to preserve Aztec culture, who wrote in the later 16th century, and the Crónica Mexicalatl, which was written in 1609 by Don Fernando de Alvarado Tezozomoc, grandson of Moctezuma, king of the Aztecs during the conquest. These accounts largely agree on events. There are other sources, such as the Aztec codices. These were created in the decades after the conquest and are largely pictorial, although sometimes written, and offer an insightful indigenous perspective on their history. The artwork is also rather beautiful. The story starts with Aztlan. It was known as fact by all Aztecs that they came from Aztlan, but not where it was. It's agreed that it was in some direction to the northwest, but not if that was in central Mexico, right next to the Basin of Mexico, which is a term I'll use interchangeably with the Valley of Mexico. It refers to a plateau in central Mexico, which is surrounded by mountains and volcanoes. It was the location of Tenochtitlan and Teotihuacan, and is the location of the modern Mexico City, if you're looking for it on a map. If you go to the website, thehistoryofpodcast.com, and look at the webpage for this episode, you will find a map of the Valley of Mexico, with all the city names labelled. When we're getting into regional politics later in the episode, looking at this map will prove very helpful. So, Aztlan may have been close to there, but it could also have been as far as the Pacific coast around California. The exact location of Aztlan isn't particularly important, though. Its relevance is more as an idea than anything else. It was established by Jiménez Moreno, a Mexican historian of the 20th century, through calculation of the new fire ceremony which marks the end of the 52-year Aztec calendar, that the wanderings of the Aztecs began about 1111. The legend states that a minimum 7 clans of Aztecs travelled from Aztlan, an island in a lake. They were led by priests carrying statues of their patron god, Huitzilopochtli. This, at least, is how the story is depicted in the Codex Borrituini. Some modern scholars are sceptical that Huitzilopochtli was so important to the Aztecs from the beginning, thinking that this tradition only developed in later centuries and was put into the legends retroactively. They think that he was just a minor god at this point. Quetzalcoatl would have been far more important, but that's not just how the story goes. Huitzilopochtli promised them that they would rule the world, and he was honoured greatly on their wandering. The religious life of the Aztecs became increasingly sophisticated, not to call human sacrifice sophisticated, but you know what I mean. They were originally semi-barbarians, to use the vocabulary of the classical world, on the fringes of the greater civilizations of the Maya and the Tolteca. But as they moved close to the Valley of Mexico, they developed a complicated religious cycle, which was, as I've said, 52 years long. They constructed temples whenever they settled, and even ball courts. We'll get into all of this later. I could spend quite a while talking about Aztec sports or the religious system, and this isn't really the time to do so. They were, though, still less civilized than their neighbors, and were wandering around the mountains of the northern area of the Mexican basin. Brian Fagan, in his book The Aztecs, writes that these wanderings read like an account of Moses, leading the Israelites around the desert, which, he also notes, isn't that surprising, given the strong Catholic influence on the 16th century sources. In the 1160s, during the first new fire ceremony of the wanderings at a place called Coatepec, there appears to have been some sort of civil war amongst the tribes. The victors were the clan of Huitzilopochtli, which would ensure his importance throughout the rest of the history of the Aztecs. This was probably the point where he transferred from being an obscure earth god to becoming the lord of the daylight sky and the god of war. During the 13th century, they moved further into the Valley of Mexico, where they were unwelcome guests. There was forever a shortage of good land, and competition was fierce. The Aztecs spent a good 100 years being pushed around the valley, eventually settling at a place named Chapultepec. In 1299, a place next to Lake Texcoco, but surrounded by hostile neighbours. The tribe grew in size, which created problems, and they were pushed out of Chapultepec around 1319, where some fled to the nearby town of Culhuacan. This was the most powerful settlement in the basin. The citizens of the city, the Culhua, didn't really want these Aztecs in their lands, so they allowed them to settle at Tizapan, a wasteland not too far from Culhuacan, where it was believed that the troublesome Aztecs would perish. They did not. The place was infested with snakes, but the Aztecs just ate them. The Culhua went to war with one of their neighbours and sent the Aztecs to fight them off for them, and the Aztecs won. They developed farming and hunting and began to flourish. They could almost be considered one of the established Mesoamerican civilizations, but there were still tensions with Culhuacan. The Aztecs asked for a princess of Culhuacan so that she could marry their god. The father of the girl, who was given to the Aztecs, went to her wedding, but he did not find the girl. He found that she had been sacrificed. There was even a priest dancing in her flayed skin. I'm sure on Game of Thrones that's probably a Bolton wedding custom or something. I'm not exactly sure on the reasons for this, but it seems that there was a message from Huitzilopochtli to start a war with Culhuacan in addition to her becoming their new Aztec god of war. The result was that fighting broke out and the Aztecs were driven away. They fled into the swamps of Lake Texcoco, where they found a reed-covered island. While they were hiding and resting, one of their priests had a vision in which Huitzilopochtli told him to search for a cactus with an eagle and a snake. This place was to be called Tenochtitlan, literally the place of the fruit of the prickly pear cactus. It must also be noted that the leader of the Aztecs at this time was a prophet called Tenoch, so it is also thought that Tenochtitlan is named after him. The very next day, they found it, and this was to be the Aztec homeland. If you look at the flag of Mexico, you will see in the centre an eagle on a cactus eating a snake. The year was 1345. There are other variations of the legend, as I'm sure you're expecting. One issue is that the foundation is dated in year 2 house, which should be 1325, but given everything else in the narrative, a 1345 is widely considered the more likely, which is why I'm going to go with that version. Other versions say that this is the place where the Aztecs were settled / sent by hostile people as part of a treaty which was filled with snakes, but the important thing here is that the Aztec state was established, and with that we can begin to move away from legend and into slightly firmer history. The settlement spent its early years thriving, steadily growing in power. They brought up mud from the bottom of the shallow lake to create small rectangles of land which could be farmed, chinampas. They were held in place by walls of basketwork, and the blocks were intersected by canals. It would prove a brilliant solution to the question of how to feed themselves. It would be the first settlement the Aztecs didn't abandon, which gives some hint of its brilliant location. Land travel was an issue in central Mexico, and it was often quicker to move by canoe. Tenochtitlan was therefore in a prime location for trade, and, as it was an island, it would also be difficult to attack. Tenochtitlan was divided into four districts, each divided into more sub-districts, which each had their own god. Tenochtitlan would rapidly grow, and within a few years it was already suffering from overpopulation, so in a date which was probably 1358, a sister city was formed, Tlatelolco. It was founded on the north side of the island in Lake Texcoco. Tenochtitlan had been on the southern side. As we'll see once the narrative continues, Tenochtitlan was the military centre of the Aztec Empire, but that isn't to say that Tlatelolco was unimportant. It would be the centre of commerce. The two would eventually fuse and become one city, sometimes called Tenochtitlan-Tlatelolco, but is often just referred to as Tenochtitlan. Tenoch ruled for 25 years. It is very interesting that the Codex Mendoza portrays Tenoch with a blue tongue. This is how members of the future ruling dynasty would be portrayed, and it highlights his preeminence despite the fact that he was just one of a number of priests. The governance of Tenochtitlan is incredibly murky in these early years. We know about Aztec institutions, but mostly in the forms they would later take. Things were quite undefined by this point in history. What we know would happen is that in the later period, there would be an elected monarchy, with the ruler chosen from a member of the ruling dynasty once it was established. There would then be an inner council of four, which would fit with the four districts of Tenochtitlan, and these would then consult with a larger body called the Tlalocan. Tenoch was probably an early form of this elected monarch, but not an absolute monarch, the kind of which are so familiar to students of European history. For most of these years, there was an uneasy peace with Culhuacan, while the flaying incident was forgotten. The Aztecs just quietly carried on consolidating their position. Then, in 1372, the Aztecs made a formal alliance with Culhuacan. As part of this alliance, the Aztec took a man from Culhuacan to be their king, Acamapichtli, founder of the Aztec dynasty, which would rule until the conquest by the Spanish. This is a very important moment in early Aztec history. It gave them a connection to the Toltec civilization they so admired, and established them as one of the political centres in the Valley of Mexico. This area of the valley had long been considered something of a backwater. Around the same time, Tlatelolco formed an alliance with the Tepaneca, taking on the ruler Cuauhtitlán, the son of Tezozómoc, whom we'll introduce in a moment. This highlights the growing importance of the region. The Tepaneca, under the leadership of its king, Tezozómoc, became the dominant force in the valley over the next 50 years, through a mixture of warfare and diplomacy. He placed his family into positions of power around the valley, rather than the traditional local rulers, which brought together his empire so that it began to creep into neighbouring valleys of Toluca and Morelos. He exacted heavy levies, much to the annoyance of the Aztecs, but Tezozómoc soon realised just how good the Aztecs were at fighting. He reduced the tribute and began to treat the Aztecs as partners rather than subjects. The Aztecs would benefit healthily from this association. This was done partly through marriage connections. When Acamapichtli died in 1391, having looked after the Aztec state well, he was succeeded by his son, Huitzilhuitzil. Once his first wife died, he married a princess from Tezozómoc's family. The Aztecs were developing a nobility, and a nobility which realised the secret to power: land, not trade. Not religious prestige, but land. They continued work on their chinampas, soon perfecting hydraulic agriculture, adding thousands of acres to their farmland in the lake. They gradually expanded their influence, making small conquests which added up, and powerful family alliances. Their position further increased when Tezozomoc conquered the last real holdout in the valley, the city of Texcoco, in 1418. When they were conquered, he gave the Aztecs the right to collect tribute from there. The Aztecs were now poised for greatness. Tepaneca power began to wane, and it would not last long following the death of Tezozomoc in 1426. The same year that Itzcoatl, a younger son of Acamapichtli, became king of the Aztecs following the death of his nephew. Itzcoatl decided to sharply change Aztec foreign policy. They would no longer be vassals to the Tepaneca. This scared the people, but the war party argued that the people were underestimating the power of their base, Tenochtitlan and Texcoco. This was a great position to be in, particularly once they added the smaller city of Tlacopan to their side, forming the Triple Alliance. The Triple Alliance began by flipping city after city to their cause, and in 1428, after a four-month siege, they took the Tepaneca capital, Azcapotzalco. It did not take long for the cities of the Mexican Valley to realise just what a mistake they had made. Sure, the Tepaneca imposed harsh tributes, but they were nothing compared to the warlike Aztecs, who had been hardened over the course of centuries of quietly growing. But this is where we will have to wait for next time out. We saw today how the Aztecs went from a group of semi-barbarians on the edge of the civilised world to, in only 120 years, masters of the Valley of Mexico. In the next episode, we will watch them rise from a position of power in the Mexican Basin to the lords of all Mexico. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks for listening.